Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg passed away at the end of last week, as we are all aware. But the political scene that was already crazy just got a lot crazier, folks. And it is going to be a wild ride right up to the election. We'll get into the response, all of that coming up. Also, Trump 2020 Advisory Board member Natalie Harp joins us. We've got a lot to get to, folks. It all starts right now. All right. Hope you had a great weekend. Thrilled to be with you. Gonna be a fun week. Gonna be a fun show. And obviously we're gonna spend a lot of time today on Ruth Bader Ginsburg's passing and the empty seat that she left, because there's going to be a lot of drama, a lot of mud flying. You know, there already was going to be, less than 2 months away from the election. Now, you know, putting that on steroids isn't, I don't even think, the appropriate term. It's going to be quite epic. The Emmys were on last night, and that's it. That's all I'm going to say about that. It was so political, as you could expect. Those people have become so out of touch that it's just, and then you watch these award shows now, and it's literally the MC in a big auditorium by himself. It's just awkward. They were out of touch. They were off the mark. I'm not going to spend any time on it. Shame on them for being so tone deaf to how the rest of America lives. All right, real quick on Mammoth Nation, guys. I've been telling you about them. They're a conservative discount club, and they're on a mission to get President Trump reelected and keep liberal Democrats out of office. Liberal being the key word there, because, man, these socialists out there, they're crazy. But they really mean it, and I wouldn't say it if I didn't. I'm a lifetime member, and if you join right now, guys, you can go to mammothnation.com. It's just $19 a year. It's better than a donation. Your first purchase will literally earn you all that back, and with your membership you get great discounts, all sorts of products, services, whether it's wireless, TV, cable, whatever, travel, insurance, you name it. There's tons of options, products. So go there. It's only $19 a year. You're also, by joining, automatically entered into the Mammoth Election Day sweepstakes. Winners will be announced on Election Day, and you can win great prizes, including a 65-inch Samsung Smart TV. So amazing stuff. Keurig, Bose speakers, some other great ones too. And if you become a lifetime member today, all that stuff happens. Plus, they'll send you a free Trump flag and some other goodies just for joining the team. We need your help, folks. Go over to mammothnation.com and join the fight. All right, let's cruise the headlines and let's get to RBG. So nothing. And we're going to just precursor, like, if you don't want to hear about Ruth Bader Ginsburg and the response and kind of the back and forth between that, you never hear people say tune out of the show, but this would be the time, because we're going to spend a lot of time on it today, because obviously it's a really big deal. It's a big story. We've known that this was coming for a while. Obviously, God rest her soul, her health has not been in great shape over the last certainly the last several months, but over the last several years. So that has been the discussion, and this is a woman who's been there since 93, you know, made a huge impression, whether you agree with her or disagree with her across the board on specific decisions or not there. She made her mark. We can all agree. We should be able to all agree upon that. She made her mark, and there'll be a she's going to be buried at Arlington Memorial, which I think is fitting for a Supreme Court justice, that there is, whether it's there or somewhere, that just comes with some honor. You know, again, I disagreed with her politics, but you served our country in a difficult spot for a long, long time. Long time. So that's what's going to happen there. But the bigger thing is, and not to just belittle her passing, but the big thing now is, okay, we've got an election, and we've got an empty Supreme Court seat. And we need all 9 seats filled. So Mitch McConnell, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, came out and said that we will be putting it forward. President Trump has said the same thing. He said some very kind things as well about Ruth Bader Ginsburg. But they said that they're going to nominate someone. And then even this morning, he said that either Friday or Saturday of this week, they would nominate an individual, a female. It's going to be a female, he said. We've got kind of a sense of who that's going to be, and we'll talk about that in a second, too. But predictably, there was mass outrage. The Democrats, the media, everyone, you know, Twitter, everyone's angry on Twitter, so that's no different. But But everyone lost their minds over the fact that the president of the United States, who is tasked with filling seats on the Supreme Court, would fill a seat on the Supreme Court. Here was, we're going to show several clips of Biden on it, but here was one instance of Biden speaking about it. Roll one.
Our country faces a choice. A choice about whether we will come back from the brink. That's what I'd like to talk with you about for a few minutes today. Within an hour of news of her passing, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said President Trump's nominee to replace Justice Ginsburg will receive a vote in the Senate within an hour of her passing. The exact opposite of what he said when President Obama nominated Merrick Garland to replace Justice Scalia in 2016. At that time, Majority Leader McConnell made up a rule based on the fiction that I somehow believed there should be no nomination to the court in election year. It's ridiculous. The only rule I've ever followed relating to the Supreme Court nomination was the Constitution's obligation for senators to provide their advice and their consent to a president's judicial nominee. But he created a new rule, the McConnell rule. Absolutely no hearing, no vote for a nominee in an election year, period, no caveats. And many Republican senators agreed with him, including then chairman of the Judiciary Committee, Chuck Grassley of Iowa, including the current chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, who at the time said, and I'll quote verbatim, here's what he said, quote, "I want you to use my words against me if there's a Republican president in 2016 and a vacancy occurs in the last year of the first term, you can say, Lindsey Graham said, let's let the next president, whoever it might be, make the nomination." Continue the quote. "And you could use my words against me, and you'd be absolutely right." End of quote. That's what a Republican said when Justice Scalia passed away, about 9 months before Election Day that year.
Now, all right, so you can get a sense of that. We're going to show some more clips. And Lindsey Graham did say that. And trust me, they are using it against him, and they are saying a lot against him. But what's confusing about this whole thing, first of all, it needs to be understood, and this will be said probably multiple times throughout the show. Both sides are going to do exactly what they're doing now, and it's very predictable, and they would do it if they were in the reverse roles as well. This is just politics, and it is important as well, but it's confusing. You're saying that you oppose, which he didn't say specifically in that clip, but he did throughout, and you'll hear another clip later where he opposes it, oppose President Trump nominating someone now, which is the president's job to do, and fulfills the seat there that's vacant. But so Biden's saying he's against that, then he's slamming McConnell and the Senate and people back in 2016 for blocking their appointee or nominee in Merrick Garland in this rule, the McConnell rule that came up. But you're pushing people now to do the same thing. It's just, my point is this. It shows how transparent, or this situation rather, is so transparent because these people are making this so political, which again, it is a political issue. It's going to be political. The Democrats want power. They want that Supreme Court seat. They will do anything to get that and prevent conservatives from getting it. The same holds true for the other side, which is why there's hilarious outrage out there. There was one person on Twitter who responded to something I said, saying, "You've already got a 5-4 lead. What's the difference going up to 6-3? Well, first of all, dominance. Like, if you don't want to dominate in life, then you suck. Like, I want 9 seats. Like, that's how you should be wired. If you're not, you're not helping the community. But these guys are pushing and making it political when the reason they're doing it is because they want the reverse to be true. They want to have more seats. They want to be able to name this. So of course there's mud being slung. There's attacks happening left and right about conservatives, Trump, whoever, you know, how dare you fill this seat? How dare you? They would do the exact same thing. And I'm not saying that the conservatives will do everything perfectly here. But I can guarantee you that the Democrats would do the exact same thing. And Biden's messaging to me is confusing. You blocked it back then when you said that a president, and we'll show a clip of Obama saying that in a second here, the president should nominate the person. And then you get mad at people for blocking it. And now you're saying that President Trump should not nominate someone. And you're saying that we, the Democrats, and even some conservatives in the Senate should block him from doing it. I don't think he sees the point in that. I don't think he sees that he's doing it. But this was his plea here to conservative members of the Senate to block this and prevent it from happening, at least in the near term, Rule 2.
Having made this their standard, going to serve their interests, they cannot, just 4 years later, change course when it doesn't serve their ends. Look, I'm not being naive. I'm not speaking to President Trump, who will do whatever he wants. I'm not speaking to Mitch McConnell, who will do what he wants, and he does. I'm speaking to those Republicans out there, Senate Republicans, who know deep down what is right for the country and consistent with the Constitution, as I stand here in the Constitution Center, not just what's best for their party. I'm speaking for millions of Americans out there who already have voted and continue to vote and will have many more have voted by the time this process is finished. Millions of Americans who are voting because they know their health care hangs in the balance. In the middle of the worst global health crisis in living memory, Donald Trump is before the Supreme Court.
So we'll get to that in a second, because he has a great little COVID gaffe, which was a huge surprise to me and the rest of us who are still among the living. But it's interesting, you know, he brings up being consistent with the Constitution, and he's pleading to some of these people, some of which have already come out and said that they don't support the vote on the GOP side, which is going to make it tricky. But he's saying, can be consistent with the Constitution, which he and Obama leaned on to say why they should vote and should nominate someone, rather, back in 2016. But the one point he does make there that I agree on, the problem is, Joe, we're just not there, is we should do what's best for the country and not a party. Absolutely. That's 100% what we should be doing. But you're not capable of that. The Democrats aren't capable of that. And most conservatives aren't capable of that either. We've got such a huge expanse between the two of us, the different approaches to life, not just politics, just life in general, is there's such a gap and there's such a divide, this hyper-partisan state that we live in. I say it all the time, people need to rally around the flag before they rally around their party or anything else, or their specific community, what have you. Either you're an American first or you're not. If you're not, get out. But you should be an American first, and then down the line, you should have your different political beliefs, and you should be able to agree, disagree on them, have conversations about it, not burn stuff down. But the problem, Joe, is we're not there, and you know, without a shout of a doubt, especially you guys, God, you guys are the worst, without a shout of a doubt, if you were in this position, you would be hustling your, and now hustling for you is slow because you're a slow guy now. You're past your prime, and that's just part of life. But you're a slow dude who shouldn't be running for president. But you would be hustling so much to try and get that seat, because whether you win or lose the election, you know that your party, wants the ability to push their agenda, and you need, in most cases, you need that Supreme Court on your side. You need to be able to tip the scale in your favor using the Supreme Court with these supremely, not no pun intended, contentious issues that are frequently being talked about and most certainly would be talked about were Biden and CamCam to get into the White House. So double standards are alive and well, but he started to go into the COVID stuff. And of course, he always attacks Trump on COVID. Everything is Trump's fault. Of course, he might as well say that he engineered it in a lab himself. That's, I mean, The attacks that he throws out on him are absolutely ludicrous. He would have done no better of a job. It's an impossible situation. But he gave us some news on the whole pandemic that should be news to you. It's pretty interesting. Another gaffe of Joe's here. This was it. Roll three.
If Donald Trump has his way, the complications from COVID-19, which are well beyond what they should be, it's estimated that 200 million people have died, probably by the time I finish this talk.
Wow.
But the complications...
That's approximately two-thirds of our population. Just gone in the span of a garbage Joe Biden speech and address to the nation. 200 million, Joe. Now, obviously, he made a mistake there. I hope he knows that. I don't know if he does or not, but I hope he does. But we had to show it because he's a gaffe machine and he's the greatest gift to conservative media, perhaps ever. You thought AOC was good, but then you get Joe in this current state, who, again, shame on the DNC and his family for allowing him to go out there and even do this. But he's all over the map. He's all over the map, and he, like every other politician out there who's hitting the media and talking to folks now, had a different tune before. Now it benefits them, so they want to stop it. If they were in the other shoes, they would do this. This is politics, folks. But just to further reiterate that on where Biden and his favorite man in the world, former President Barack Obama, were on this issue. This was Obama in 2016 talking about this very same issue of appointing someone in an election year. Roll four.
About what is supposed to happen now. When there is a vacancy on the Supreme Court, the President of the United States is to nominate someone. The Senate is to consider that nomination and either they disapprove of that nominee or that nominee is elevated to the Supreme Court. Historically, this has not been viewed as a question. There's no unwritten law that says that it can only be done on off years. That's not in the constitutional text. I'm amused when I hear people who claim to be strict interpreters of the Constitution suddenly reading into it a whole series of provisions that are not there. There is more than enough time for the Senate to consider in a thoughtful way the record of a nominee that I present and to make a decision. We're going to find somebody who is an outstanding legal mind, somebody who cares deeply about our democracy and cares about rule of law. There's not going to be any particular position on a particular issue that determines whether or not I nominate them, but I'm going to present somebody who indisputably is qualified for the seat, and any fair-minded person, even somebody who disagreed with my politics, would say would serve with honor and integrity on the court. Part of the problem that we have here is we've almost gotten accustomed to how obstructionist the Senate's become when it comes to nominations. So in some ways, this argument is just an extension of what we've seen in the Senate generally, and not just on judicial nominees.
Should we interpret your comments just now that you are likely to choose a moderate nominee? Would you consider...
No.
All right. Well, you get the point. He was all for it. It doesn't say you can't do this. It doesn't say any... he was pushing for it. Now, he's butthurt because he didn't get his guy. It didn't happen. And he spoke out this week saying Trump shouldn't fill it. Which, again, when he was in a similar situation, tried to fill it, pled with people as to why he should be allowed to do it. So it's just, again, it's going to be interesting, but we're going to keep seeing the left saying it's inappropriate to do this. You know, she just passed away. Well, yes, she just passed away. That's awful. No one's saying, there probably are, and shame on those people, but for the most part, no one's saying, thank God she passed away. She's dead. No. Saying that sucks. She had a lifelong career of service. Now we have an obligation to fill this seat. And it just so happens that we beat you in 2016, so we get the first dibs at doing it. If we'd be pissed too if you were in office and you got to put another person on there, because that so much hangs in the balance with the Supreme Court. But we're just going to see this. The left has flip-flopped all over it. The right has too. All these situations show just how nasty these politicians are. And I'm not talking about the president. I'm talking about these establishment politicians, these, you know, the Pelosi's, the Schumer's, some of the folks on the right too, who know how to play the game, and they're going to play it. They're going to play it as long as they can. But President Trump and the GOP in this particular instance aren't the only ones who think this seat should be filled. There's a new poll out there. It's a Marquette University poll that found that 2/3 of Americans who are not dead, Joe, I know that you said 2/3 of us are dead, 2/3 of Americans support conducting the Supreme Court confirmation process during an election year, while just 32% were against it. I think we've got the poll. You can see it. It's kind of a mess as you make it out here. But 68% of Republicans, 63% of Democrats, and 71% of independents say that they support holding these elections during an election year. Excuse me, these confirmations during an election year. So there's overwhelming support for it. Everyone on the left, again, is saying, oh, this is outrageous. But we've got sound bites. We've just played a couple here. You could go on YouTube or Twitter or wherever and find a gazillion more of these same people crying about it, taking the opposite stance in the past because they're politicians and they don't care about anything but themselves and their party. They don't care about you. They don't care about us. They don't care about me. But it's going to happen. The president is doing it. It's his right to do it. It's the GOP's right to do it because we control the White House right now and we control the Senate. So if we can keep those people in play and get this vote through, then guess what? We get another person on the Supreme Court. Sorry, sucks to be you, Democrats. If it doesn't happen and God forbid you win the election, then yes, you will get to do that. And that sucks for us. That's just the way the cookie crumbles. So later this week, we're supposed to hear it is a lot of thought that it would be, you know, leading up to the Justice Ginsburg's death, a lot of thought that it'd be Amy Coney Barrett, who's been a name that's circulated a lot. She was in the mix last time when Kavanaugh was put forth and approved. But Judge Barbara Lagoa out of Florida seems to be a hot pick this week. Kind of came out of nowhere. Trump had put her in as I think she's an appeals judge in Florida. But a key state of Florida. She's Hispanic, brings a lot to the table, a woman of faith. Now, they're going to find stuff to pick on her for, because that's what you do in these hearings. They're going to drag this poor woman, whether it's her or Amy Barrett, they're going to drag them through the mud, so they better have thick skin. But a lot of thought that Trump is going to go with Lagoa because of her ethnicity, because of the state she's from, because of a lot of the boxes he checked. And this was Dan Gaynor who tweeted out this idea here. You can see it. Trump nominates Barbara Lagoa. He's predicting. He's not confirming. And makes the Democrats go to war against a Hispanic woman from Florida. He wins either way. And then gives some a shout out to, RBG, saying rest in peace there. But we're going to get a good candidate one way or the other. I think he's got five. It's narrowed down to five. I think it's probably those two. I might be wrong. I'm not sitting in the meetings with him, but I think it's probably gonna be those two. And I mean, literally, you're beating down so many doors to go after, harass, and drag these women through the political charade that they no doubt will. And I think it only ends up making the Democrats who've hoped that violence in the streets would work, it didn't. They would hope that impeachment would work, it didn't. They would hope that this would work, it didn't. And now you're going to attack a good woman, whichever one it is, a good woman, on national television in front of everybody, sling awful, horrible insults towards her. And I think you're going to ostracize even more voters and realize, you know what? It is the president's job to nominate someone and put them forward. It is the Senate's job to hear this, vote on it, and if approved, then that's the rules. But in the process, we saw more garbage out of you evil, mean-spirited Democrats, which is where that party is now. And I think it comes back to bite them. The trick is going to be our side. You know that they're going to just throw all sorts of shade and hate her way, whichever female it is. But Susan Collins, Fairweather Senator from Maine, and Lisa Murkowski from Alaska have both said that they don't intend to vote. They don't think that we should before the election. One of them, I forget which one, said even after the inauguration. Senator Josh Hawley, though, has come out and said that they're going to rally. Obviously, Mitch McConnell's going to garner as much support as he can to try and get this thing through. And Hawley said, even this morning, I think he was on Fox News, and said, look, this is our job. It's our job to do a myriad of things as U.S. senators, among which is when there is a vacancy and the president puts forth someone, we hear it, we hear the case, we all talk about it, we debate, we vote, first on the committee, then across the whole board in the Senate, and then either it's a yay or a nay, and then you go from there. And even RBG said that vacancies should be filled during election years back in 2016, by the way, which I'm sure you've seen and heard now. So interesting times. You know, you lose two there. There's going to be others who are problem children, which what I don't understand is, and you should see through this, these people who are waffling on that are choosing their own seat, in the case of Susan Collins, who's up for election, choosing her own seat over the good of the country, over the good of the party, and it should be in that order, country, then party. But what the Dems want to do to the Constitution, what the Dems want to do if they had the power in the Supreme Court to do it, would devastate our country. And her unwillingness to vote on that, even if it means maybe I lose some people, maybe I lose my seat, it shows that she cares more about herself and her job and her cush situation than she does the country. And then secondly, the party, who could position themselves for a long, long stretch to have a strong voice on the Supreme Court. So it really rubs me the wrong way when you see people like these two women. It doesn't have to be women. It just happens to be women in this case who are doing that. I hope they change their mind. But moreover, I hope that McConnell and the others can get the votes they need. All right, on the other side, we're going to talk about Pelosi's response to this. She came out. You probably heard what she said, but God, she's not very smart. We'll do it with Trump 2020 Advisory Board member Natalie Harp. Well, we've got you. Go to DrewBerkwist.com. We definitely appreciate you being there. You can watch the show there. You can get tons of news commentary on a daily basis. Lots to offer there. So go check around. Look around the site if you have not already. Also, give us a like or a follow on Facebook, Twitter, Parler, all the likely typical social platforms that you see down there at the bottom of your screen. And if you have not subscribed already on YouTube, you can do so right down here in the corner if you're watching. If you're not, head over there and just in the lower right corner underneath the video player, you can subscribe. If you want notifications, you can click that bell icon and it'll notify you anytime we upload something new. All right, tons more to get to. Stick around.
Mammoth Nation is the discount club for conservatives. You get great discounts on name brand products and services, and the proceeds help candidates who support the right causes. Plus, the money you save from just one purchase can pay for your entire membership. Liberal Democrats are destroying America, and we can't let Joe Biden be president. It's time to join the fight. Strength in numbers. We give the silent majority a resounding voice. Go to mammothnation.com and let's win this fight together.
All right, welcome back, folks. This segment, as usual, brought to you by Hero Soap Company. See them right here. Amazing products, guys. Veteran-owned company. They do a ton to help get homeless veterans off the street, working with Operation Finally Home. Their soap is off the chain. Again, this is one example. You've seen several others on the show. I use it all the time, and I love it. Your significant other will love it, your friends, your family, whatever. it's all natural, made with essential oils, none of those harmful fragrance and chemicals that the competitor soap companies out there use. Plus, it's handmade right here in the U.S. of A, out in Arizona. So American-made, veteran-owned company, awesome, awesome stuff. Head on over to herosoapcompany.com and subscribe for a no-contract monthly delivery of soap right to your house. Again, it's herosoapcompany.com. Let freedom clean. All right, so we've covered a ton already today of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, her passing, all of the drama that's come since and that we're going to, frankly, be experiencing for a while. Some of that drama that we might be experiencing here is what Pelosi said yesterday. This was her Rule 5.
Some have mentioned the possibility, if they try to push through a nominee in a lame duck session, that you and the House could move to impeach President Trump or Attorney General Barr as a way of stalling and preventing the Senate from acting on this nomination.
Well, we have our options. We have arrows in our quiver that I'm not about to discuss right now.
Bow and arrow. Never, by the way, side point, drink lots of Chardonnay like Nance does and use a bow and arrow. It's just not a good idea. Free tip, won't charge you for that one. But joining us to discuss this is Trump 2020 Advisory Board member Natalie Harp. Natalie, good to see you.
Great to be with you, Drew.
Well, thanks for being here. So much outrage over this, and I'm sure you've talked about it already ad nauseum in the position that you're in. But there's so much anger, which is hilarious to me, because obviously they would be doing the exact same thing were they in this position. But what do you make of Pelosi's comments? Let's start there.
Here we go again, right? I mean, it's like impeachment worked so well for them last time. Donald Trump's still your president. So it really is amazing when they pull this out again. It just shows again how political it was at the beginning of the year and last year when they first started the impeachment. Well, they've been trying to impeach him right for the last 4 years. It just shows it's always been political. There's never been anything there. It's like, oh, we're going to impeach you if you do this. Are you kidding me? This isn't America. I mean, what have the House Democrats done for anybody in the last 2 years except investigate the president that we all elected 4 years ago? So, I mean, here she goes again with crazy Nancy. You know, I mean, that's why when the president calls her that, she's crazy, isn't she? I mean, she just keeps going back to the same thing, impeachment all the time. So that's why, you know, she has something to look forward to this November 3rd, because she's going to be the minority leader once again.
Yeah. No, I hope you're right. I think you are right. I think that's going to happen. And you're definitely right that they have spent this whole time being butthurt since 2016. I mean, Hillary, who has nothing to do with politics anymore, really. But I mean, she's out there still angry. They've all been angry, you know, trying to flip over every rock that they've created. They're made up rocks and they're flipping them over, dragging us all through it. When in the end, it's the president's job to nominate a vacant seat for the Supreme Court. Even President Obama said it back in 2016, played that clip earlier today. But I mean, am I missing something? That is his job to do, right?
Right. Well, you see the videos going around of what everybody said 4 years ago. And that was even a different situation, because I mean, we have a Republican Senate and we have a Republican president right now. That was different in 2016. You had a Democrat president and a Republican Senate. So it was obviously, and he was in the lame duck. I mean, you knew you were going to get a new president. Here we know we're going to get 4 more years of Donald Trump. I mean, this isn't, you know, 8 years, you know, into it, and then we're trying to cram it through or something. So it really is, it's like the Democrats though, right? I mean, they're always flip-floppers. I mean, their whole party, their whole issues is just anything against Trump. I mean, whatever he stands for, they're the opposite. So it's just like pretty hard to take anyone seriously. Though I think it was kind of interesting yesterday when AOC came out with Chuck Schumer. I'm like, where's Nancy? Like, this was her greatest fear, right? To be replaced by AOC. It's like AOC is really the one running the party, where impeachment is now this political tool that they just hold over everybody's heads. Like, oh, we're going to impeach you. Like, I don't get it. It didn't accomplish anything last time except get the president's poll numbers through the roof and get people really fired up for 4 more years. So sure, try it again. And yeah. Just wait to see what happens to your House majority. It's going to be a minority pretty bigly.
Yeah, they don't learn. They do not learn. Every plan that they go after and attempt to do, it blows up in their face. But then remarkably, they try the exact same plan. They just fill in the blanks. It's like an Mad Lib. They fill in the blanks with a different idea. And let's try it again. We'll lie to the American people. We'll throw mud. And it's going to work this time. And then it doesn't. It never works. It hasn't worked yet. So the Biden campaign has raised a lot of money. He's an awful candidate. I have so much fun, and I'm sure you do too, getting to talk about Joe Biden every day, because I just don't think that there's been much worse of a campaign and a ticket than Biden and Cam. But they've raised a lot of money. Is that enough for them to make a push with Americans, gain a little bit more vote? I mean, forget the polls, but just from a campaign and strategic standpoint, does that help them?
Well, just ask Jeb Bush and Hillary Clinton how well raising a lot of money worked out in 2016. I mean, money doesn't win races. I think that's what President Trump proved in 2016. People do. And when you look at our campaign, I mean, the small donors that are behind this campaign are pretty huge. I mean, everyone was always talking about Bernie Sanders had small donors behind him. Well, have you looked at how many small donors we have behind us? And small donors vote, you know, and that's a pretty big momentum that you've got, the energy that's behind this campaign. Of course, we've got a lot of good resources going on. The president said he could put up more money if we need it, but we're doing just fine. It's like, look at Minnie Mike's campaign, right? He threw so much billions now he's into this in terms of defeating President Trump, and like he couldn't even last one debate. So the Democrats always, we know they can raise a lot of money. They always do it. They throw it at races. They somehow think it's going to buy votes by, you know, buying all up all this advertising. But we're very targeted. We're very strategic in terms of where we're investing the resources. We don't throw money at an issue. We actually try to focus and concentrate it where it's actually going to make a difference. I mean, that's when you have a businessman running for office. It's like he knows what works, and everything's always under budget and ahead of schedule. So he does the same approach to this campaign. We saw how well it worked in 2016. And in 2020, we really do have an army for Trump, as we call it, in terms of all of these small donors, all the boat parades, truck parades. I mean, you know, tractor parades, we're not even organizing these. The people are. So it's really amazing to just see the momentum that's behind the president's campaign. And all you've got is money behind Joe Biden. And I mean, you don't even see him for like 99.9% of the time. It's everybody else saying what he is, or else you just see whatever he's reading off a teleprompter. So that doesn't win elections. You know, it's people getting people out to vote, and the president has always won on all fronts on that in terms of energizing his base.
Yeah. No, the contrast couldn't be more stark. I mean, and part of the reason they're hiding him, frankly, is not just because he's incapable of speech and thinking on his own, but because he's just so unexciting. Like, you put him out there and it's going to detract vote. I mean, it hurts them more than it helps them. You can't compete with the enthusiasm that's out there. To your point, the boat parades, all this, you've never seen a movement like this in the history of politics. It's pretty remarkable. And I think I don't know what y'all's thoughts are on this, but there's a lot of young voters who are definitely not conservative. They're definitely not Trump voters. Obviously there's tons that are, but you look at the kids who are in college now and they're being fed a bunch of garbage. Even some of them see that Biden is not the right fit. And that generation, more than any other, or demographic rather, tends to sit elections out. Like, is there a thought that that will happen again? And a lot of them will just say, you know what? I don't like Trump, but this candidate sucks. I'm just going to Chipotle and going to get a burrito. Like, I'm not voting.
Well, when you look at like Gen Xers or millennials, they don't really like being told what to do. I mean, they like to do the absolute opposite. So I think people have long memories. My generation has long memories in the sense that we all remember what happened around Super Tuesday, right? I mean, Bernie had the momentum, and then all of a sudden, all the Democrats drop out and throw it behind Joe Biden, who had like zero momentum. It's like their candidate was pretty much chosen for them. And kids don't like that. I mean, it's like they want to be able to choose. Everybody loved Bernie and, you know, Elizabeth Warren, kind of. And it's like they didn't like how Bernie was treated back in 2016. And the president actually got some of Bernie Sanders voters when you look at it, because the one issue that they all agree on is trade, that we're being ripped off for too long. So people don't like, you saw even at the Democrat convention 4 years ago, how upset people were that it was stolen from Bernie. It was stolen from Bernie again. I mean, this Democrat Party doesn't care what their voters think. They just always prop up certain candidates and then expect people to show up and vote for them. So I think that's really going to play bad for young people. Sure, they're out protesting and rioting in the streets, but are they really going to show up at the polls in November? That's not really how they like to handle problems. I mean, they've been burning down buildings and everything and rioting and just trying to create noise instead of actually trying to like make a difference. So the Democrats are not very good in terms of keeping loyal supporters. I mean, look at it, the Democrat Party, what is it? I mean, AOC is pulling it at the time. Then you have these deep swamp, you know, creatures that are deep state bureaucrats that are doing it. The Democrat Party is very controlled and very, a lot of bureaucrats, but then you also have the rioters in the streets that are pulling the party left. So it's not as convalesced around a certain issue as one might think. And that does make a difference in the polls in November, because people want to show up. I mean, they can hate Trump all they want, but is that going to really motivate them to go to the polls or do their, you know, unsolicited ballots and fill in the name for Joe Biden? I mean, Joe Biden hasn't done anything for them. I mean, he's been there for 40 years. Young people don't like that. I mean, it's like they're probably just sit this one out or go with the president, because, I mean, trade, that's at least one issue that they can agree with him on.
Yeah. No, definitely. Definitely. I think that so much of that's going to happen. And I think that they doubled down so hard on this violence in the street and trying to pin blame on him, which is laughable at best. And it's backfired a lot. And I think that there's the people we're talking about who aren't going to vote because they traditionally don't. And then there's a lot of other people who are like, you know what? I still don't like him, but I'm voting for him because I don't want this. Like, I don't want this violence coming to my streets. I think another thing,
and they don't like being controlled, right? I mean, they don't like being controlled. Everybody's lived under lockdowns in certain Democrat states. So I think a lot of like millennials or Gen Xers that maybe didn't realize how much politics influenced their life, and they're like, no, you can't go to the beach, or you can't go out to eat, you can't hang out with your friends in more than groups of 10. I think that plays really bad. I mean, look at it. The young people are even protesting outside of like the very liberal mayor of Portland's home. So I think the Democrats really do have an issue on their hands.
Definitely. Well, in Michigan, really important state, the way that Whitmer's handled the lockdown stuff up there is awful. I think that comes back to bite them. It'll be interesting. The debates are coming up. Does Joe actually make it to the... I know he's saying he's going to. I know there's people who think there's an issue. Does he actually make it to the debate? And how much does that, even though polls suck and they don't really matter that much because they're always wrong, how much does that help narrow the gap even more and or put Trump over the top for the polls? We know that he's over top as it is now, but how do the debates play?
Well, it'll be great to get him in a room together, won't it? I mean, for so long, it's like when Joe Biden talks, you know it's not Joe Biden. It's whatever he's reading off the teleprompter. I mean, even his Twitter account, you read it, that's not Joe Biden. I mean, he has his minions writing it for him. So when you actually have him in a room versus the president with no teleprompter or anything, I mean, you're really going to see who Joe Biden is. And I think it is kind of weird because nobody really knows what to expect with Joe Biden. He's such a flip-flopper in terms of different issues, or he plagiarizes. I mean, here when he had his Buy American slogan and you're like, hello, it was like Buy American under you. It's like, where were you for the last 47 years? So I think it's going to be really good to have them in a room together and people finally get to see, you know what, this is who Joe Biden really is. I mean, you can only prop up someone so much until they have to stand by themselves in a room with Donald Trump and actually debate the issues. And I think voters really want to see that because everything's been so manufactured around Joe Biden. He hides, he doesn't take questions from the press. I mean, it's going to be friendly. I mean, come on, the debates, the press is going to be extremely friendly and gentle on Joe Biden. But Donald Trump isn't. He's going to put the hard questions to him. And that's what voters want to see. They want answers. They deserve answers. I mean, we've had Joe Biden for 47 years. Now he's promising to do all these things like the opposite of what he actually put into law years ago. But nobody's questioning him on that. And he needs to be questioned on that if he thinks he can somehow be president.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think the town halls and some of these events, and I've talked about this, I'm sure you have as well, that he's done have not set him up well for that, because he's gotten these lob ball questions. He's gotten a cakewalk, and he's going to get smacked in the face with these debates, because even if Wallace or some of these guys aren't too hard on him, I think Wallace will probably be hard on him. He'll be hard on the president too, but Trump's definitely going to be hard on him. And I tell you what, there's probably some really fun drinking games and stuff you could do for these debates, because the amount of times that Biden's going to like want to fight Trump and say angry things as gaffes, it's going to be pretty hilarious. I can't wait. I think it's going to be the best TV of the year. It's definitely on my calendar. Natalie, what's the best place to follow you?
Oh, you can follow me on Twitter at Natalie J. Harp, but follow Team Trump, of course, Real Donald Trump. It's like that's where you can find out where the momentum is and for voters and people to just get out and vote, because it's up to us right now. You know, it's like the president's fought for us for the last 4 years, but it's like now it's our turn to fight for him. We have 6 weeks left. This really is the most important election in our lifetimes, because it could be the last time we vote on a lot of things, including the Supreme Court, because if the Democrats get in, they've already said nothing's off the table. We can take them seriously on that. The Green New Deal, no energy industry, Medicare for all, no private health industry. I mean, these are huge things. No Supreme Court, they'll stack the courts against you. This is the most important election. So it's up to all of us to get out there, because on election day, we're all equal, we're all one vote, and we better go give 4 more years to Donald Trump.
I love it. Absolutely. Well, definitely do that, folks. Thank you so much for everything that you do for the campaign. Thanks for being here today, Natalie. We'd love to have you back.
Great to be with you, Drew.
All right, folks. That's all we got for today. Big thanks again to Natalie for stopping by. We appreciate you watching, listening, whatever you're doing. If you want to hang out for after hours, we've got. I mean, you're not going to believe this. These rioters and what they're saying now, they're offended. They're hurt by what's happening to them. We'll get into it. We'll get into it in after hours. So if you're listening, you can just hang out right here. The after hours credits will play. You'll hear what I'm talking about. If you want to watch, come on over to the after hours section of the YouTube page. You can do it there. You can also see it on drewberquist.com and check that out. If you got to take off, we understand, but we greatly appreciate you being with us today. It's going to be a great week, guys. Lots of fun content, some important content too. We've got some great interviews that are less newsy and really touch on some important topics. So looking forward to sharing those with you as well this week. We hope you have a great day. And remember, folks, we've all got our own ideas, opinions. It's important that we discuss them and we do so fairly. But this is my show, and we hope you enjoyed it.
Do you love freedom? Do you love being clean? Then you'll love Hero Soap Company, made in the USA. Chemical and fragrance-free. A portion of each purchase donated to veteran and first responder charities. Initial subscription purchase is matched bar for bar and sent overseas to deploy troops. Let freedom clean. Hero Soap Company.
All right, welcome to After Hours, folks. So this, I had to share this with you. This is an interesting story. Quite ironic. Not, as you hear it, at first you're like, what? But then you're like, okay, that makes sense. That makes sense. But we've seen over 100 days of violence, rioting, looting, assault, throwing Molotov cocktails, throwing explosives, all of this stuff. There's dudes with shields out there. Granted, they're made out of pool toys. But it's quite the scene. Right, we know that in Portland, it's been that way in Minneapolis. We've seen Kenosha, we've seen Seattle, we've seen so many cities, Lancaster, PA, as of late, Rochester, New York, so many that have dealt with this, but none more than Portland. And with so many of these people out there, who again, the basis for all of them has always been their message, I guess, has always been. We want peace and equality and change, fairness for everyone. And, you know, it's okay. Like, but as soon as you go against them, as soon as you do something that differs and you have a different opinion than them, they do what you're seeing here. Violent outrages, threats, assault, stuff is burned. I mean, we see literally animal-like behavior from these people who claim to be the peaceful, and they are. Most of them, again, are betas and they're mouth breathers, and they're just not getting much resistance, so they're empowered and they feel like they can do things. Andy Ngo's been out on the ground in Portland. He's always there. He knows a lot about Antifa. He's gotten hit in the head with a concrete milkshake by them, assaulted other times. But he's been out there. He's shown tons of footage, and people like him, and he's not the only one, but he's certainly one of the best. But people like him have documented on a nightly basis what's actually happening there. And if you're not following him or looking at his stuff, you should go on Twitter. He's got a huge following on Twitter. I'm shocked that Twitter has let him stick around, because he shares the truth. But he has amazing quality of footage, shows what's going on there. And you can see on a nightly basis the violence, the mayhem that for so long, now they're starting to say that, you know, some of it's peaceful. Or violent, rather. But before, they were saying that it's peaceful. And then you could go and see all this stuff on social media and be like, well, I think we have a different definition of peaceful. But these animals who are out there doing this, and again, I say that not because they have a different opinion. The people who are there peacefully protesting have a different opinion. Even if they're wrong, I have no problem with. No problem with. If you got a different opinion than me, cool. That's fine. I'm right, but whatever. But like, you have your different opinion. But as soon as you go out of bounds and start breaking laws and not caring about other lives around you, which is ironic as that's what you're chanting in most cases, but you're not going to ever get that. So we'll just skip past that part. But they throw themselves into these communities. They throw themselves in the faces of people and do these awful things in the name of peace, equality, justice, and have no care, totally disregard what anyone else feels, thinks, does, how it's going to affect them, what their background is. They don't care. They just act out their emotions as they happen, and they don't think about it. And there should be grave consequences. But in Portland, there really hasn't been. In Portland, Mayor Ted Wheeler, who sadly is way better than that chick that's running against him and could win. It's terrifying when Ted Wheeler is your best choice out there, and we need to be rooting for him. But Ted Wheeler and DA Michael Schmidt have been not prosecuting these people. They get arrested for assaulting police officers, assaulting innocent civilians, attacking, vandalizing, destroying property, businesses, police buildings, police vehicles, you name it, and then they're let go. And these angry kids are now getting upset because they're getting harassed. Because what happens is You have people like Andy Ngo, who again, doing a hell of a job out there, will post images like this on Twitter of their mugshots and give an update and then talk about how they were released. Multiple criminal offenses, but then quickly released without bail. No big deal. Hey, head back out there, get yourself back in the game. We've got another one as another example. You know, same thing. And we just pulled two examples so you could get the visual of it. You can see countless ones on his feed if you go there. But these mugshots, by the way, public record, like you don't need to be like some sleuth to go find them. He just knows what's happening there and is trying to demonstrate to the world that, hey, A, look at these videos. Anyone who says this is not violent and this is not assaulting police and this is not assaulting businesses and citizens is literally blind and stupid. And then, hey, look at Mayor Ted Wheeler and Michael Schmidt are saying that these guys, that they're doing a good job of enforcing it and controlling the situation. We don't need outside help. We don't want your help, President Trump. But these violent criminals, who granted, most of them couldn't hurt a fly because they're weak, but they're still throwing projectiles at people. They can hurt them that way. I'm saying physically they couldn't hurt them, but you know what I'm saying. They're getting arrested for breaking the law each and every night and then let right back out to go and be a pain in the ass for those same police officers who arrested them the next night. And there's no accountability, but they're getting upset. They're getting their feelings hurt because people see who they are because your mugshot says who you are. And it associates you with what you are, which is scum, Antifa or BLM scum, whichever variety you are. It's all really kind of the same now. And they're getting upset that people are harassing them. They're being harassed, which is what they literally do for a living, is cause mayhem and harass everyday Americans. Some of which are their supporters. They don't know. They don't care. We've seen houses of mayors who support them. Other local and city officials who support them. They don't know. They don't care because they aren't able to think. And they go and attack and vandalize their homes. They go chant outside their homes when these are people who did, at least before, support them. But they're upset because they're being harassed by normal people who are sick of their country being destroyed, or at least in the case of Portland, the city being destroyed. And I think it is so ironic and so amazing. Now, again, they're not going to get it. They're not smart enough to understand and connect those dots. We've seen that. That's true. They're in that fringe category, that far left fringe category that's just not worth it. It's not worth trying to teach them that. There's some on the other side that are in that same category too, but not really to the extent that we've seen here. Golly. This is remarkable, but I had to share it with you. So folks, if the ones who are arrested and their mugshots are out there and you know who they are, and then they get let out to go fight again, by all means, harass them. Don't go down there and confront them. Don't go down there and confront them. But I think it's pretty funny. I do think it's okay to go say stuff on Twitter. Play their game. Like, see how they like it. They don't like it. You push back against a bully, and they eventually learn and they stop. And that's what these kids are. They're not strong bullies. They're weak keyboard bullies and people who have mass numbers and no leadership in cities like Portland that push them back. So they think they can get away with it. Don't let them get away with it. All right. Appreciate you joining us for After Hours. Appreciate you joining us for the show. It was a fun one. We thank Natalie for stopping by. Lots to get to this week. I know it's going to be a lot of RBG. We're going to try and do some other stuff tomorrow just to break free from that, because it's going to be constant. It's going to be crazy the whole time leading up to the election and possibly confirmation of this individual once they are announced. But again, appreciate you being here. Be sure to give us a like on Facebook, Twitter, Parler, the like, all of those. You can see them down here. Subscribe if you haven't on YouTube. We'd greatly appreciate it. We love the support we're getting from you, and we want it to continue to grow so we can keep doing this, because we can't keep doing this if y'all don't support it, you don't watch it, you don't share away. So please do that. Thanks so much in advance. We hope you have a great day.